From the heartland of America, the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, the stage of time as we talk about consciousness. And on the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11 launch to the moon, I want to congratulate my 18-year-old granddaughter, Kaya. She got her private pilot's license today. She did her complete solo flight. Wow. Congratulations, Kaya. Here's what's happening. The United States fears that Iran may have seized a United Arab Emirates-based tanker in the Strait of Hormuz. Nobody knows where it is. And a British warship steaming to the Gulf of Hormuz out there is on high alert after an Iranian bomb boat was discovered in its path. The unmanned attack vessel, packed with explosives, could have blown a hole in the hull of the destroyer. The remote-controlled blowfish was spotted lurking in the Red Sea by Saudi Arabia forces close to the British tanker's route as she sails to protect shipping in the Gulf of Mexico. And North Korea has warned the United States that breaking its promise and holding military exercises with South Korea next month would jeopardize its nuke talks and could result in the regime resuming missile tests. Let's check in with Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. Well, so far, after all these summit meetings, nothing's happening, John.
Well, I think what's happening is behind the scenes. You know, there's a lot of diplomacy going on. I think you've got delegation, both the North Korean delegation and the U.S. delegation, working on a potential peace treaty. The idea that the U.S. is going to engage, George, in war games again with South Korea is preposterous, and it's just a lot of hype. It's not going to happen under Trump's watch. He was in, that DMZ zone with Kim Jong-un meeting in the Peace House, and the two are committed to continuing these talks going, and he's not going to do anything that's going to, jeopardize, North Korea, starting up its nuclear testing program or more ballistic missile tests. So I think a lot of these news reports are, again, I don't want to call them exactly fake news, but they're baseless because anyone that's been following this closely knows there will be no joint military exercises with South Korea. So it's a bit of a phony story.
I would agree with you, John. I'd be very surprised and shocked if we did some joint effort exercises with South Korea. Thank you. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. A federal judge has barred former President Trump advisor Roger Stone, who's been on the program, facing charges of tampering, obstruction, and false statements in a case brought by special counsel Robert Mueller, from posting anything on social media after determining that Stone violated her gag order not to discuss the case. Teens who spend too much time on social media or watching television become notably more depressed, they say. The six-year study tracked more than 3,800 students in Montreal, asking them to track in class both how much time per day they had spent watching TV, browsing social media, and playing video games. As part of the survey, they were asked to measure their level of depressive symptoms, such as loneliness and sadness, and it was very, very high. Bitcoin tumbles as U.S. senators grill Facebook on its crypto plans. And we'll talk about that with Lauren Weinstein in a moment. And critics are slamming the $5 billion fine against Facebook for privacy problems as being weak. Lauren Weinstein, our expert on the Internet. First of all, Lauren, your thoughts on this $5 billion fine against Facebook.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think these kinds of issues are going to be solved by fines. I mean, they're handy deep pockets for governments that are looking for new revenue streams, but they're not going to help. Nor is breaking up the companies. You hear politicians, we're going to break up the big tech companies. It's ludicrous. You blow up an asteroid headed toward Earth, and what usually is going to happen, right? You're going to have loads of smaller asteroids.
Little ones all over the place.
Doing more damage over a wider area. Look how effective breaking up AT&T was, right? That worked out just great. Losing proposition in a number of key aspects. And you hear people yelling, oh, we're going to create new regulations. We're going to create new laws. Usually, that's not the answer either when it comes to technology-related issues, because really, once you have pandering politicians getting their fingers into these situations, they don't get better, they get worse. So in the final analysis, in my opinion, this is really up to the users.
And what's your take on this cryptocurrency problem right now because of Facebook?
Well, It's not, you know, this of course is all based on Facebook's recent announcement that they were going to launch a cryptocurrency of their own. And this caused a lot of the central banks and other financial experts looking at it to get concerned. And I think there's a lot of validity to that. Personally, I'm not a believer in cryptocurrencies. I think that they're largely sucker bait, and they're so speculative. They're not tied to anything real. I mean, you know, there are people that talk about returning to the gold standard. Well, that's not necessarily a good idea, but compared with Bitcoin, at least gold is a physical thing you can touch. There is so much fraud in cryptocurrency. It seems like every other week or even more frequently you hear that a major cryptocurrency exchange has been hacked. And the amount of crypto money that has come out of those that have been hacked out, 30 million, 40 million, 100 million, it's just devastating. So unless people have money they're willing to risk in the most risky way possible, personally, I would recommend staying out of Bitcoin and staying out of cryptocurrencies in general.
Good advice, Lauren. Thank you so much. You know, it doesn't take a scientific study to know that spending some time with a cuddly cat or friendly dog will probably put you in a better mood. That being said, researchers from Washington State University have found objective psychological evidence that just 10 minutes spent petting a cat or dog will lower your stress levels. How about that? There's a snake-like UFO being spotted again as a mystery object emits energy beams over the state of Washington. People have no idea what it is, but they've been seeing this snake-looking object for some time. Well, today marks the 20 years since John F. Kennedy Jr., his wife Carolyn, and her sister Lauren Bessette died when the single-engine plane he piloted plunged into the Atlantic Ocean off of Martha's Vineyard. Although a final number on his net worth varies, the 38-year-old was a multimillionaire who died in 1999. His fortune was estimated at $30 to $100 million, with the bulk of his personal estate going to the children of his older sister, Caroline. Lots of people have speculated on the death of JFK Jr., and who really knows? One of his dear friends said he was really not qualified to be flying the plane that night that it went down. But award-winning songwriter Karen Sokoloff-Jevits commemorates the 20th anniversary of the passing of John F. Kennedy Jr. with an original song. Once Upon a Time plays a touching tribute to the life of a prince, they say, whose life was cut short by this terrible tragedy on July 16th, 1999.
Once upon a time, we had a prince. We had a prince for all of time. Once upon a time, this handsome prince, he was yours and he was mine. His life connected us to all that was before, and his future was so much more.
We'll put the link for the rest of the song up on our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com, and you can take a listen to the entire song. In a moment, Father Nathan Castle joins us. His work, Afterlife Interrupted, Helping Stuck Souls Cross Over, a Catholic Priest Explores the Interrupted Death Experience. He's next with us on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, our special guest for the next couple hours, Father Nathan Castle. First time for him here on the program over the past 20 years. Father Castle, OP, has helped at least 250 people who died suddenly adjust to the afterlife. Now, these victims of fires, automobile accidents, shootings, stabbings, drownings, horrible tragedies came to him in his dreams seeking help. And although such contact was not something he sought out, Father Nathan has come to believe that providing such help is something the Holy Spirit has given him to do. He has written a book called Afterlife Interrupted, Helping Stuck Souls Cross Over. Father, welcome to the program. I'm looking forward to this.
It's going to be fun. Thanks, George.
And OP stands for Order of Preachers. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we are a little more than 800 years old. We're founded by St. Dominic Guzman. I joined because he's known as the Joyful Friar. I was looking for a positive group of people to live my life with, and that's worked out really great for me.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. Now, how did this all happen for you? What happened where you started dreaming of all these people who died tragically?
Well, and because it's such a strange story, I mean, you're familiar with strange, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. We sure are, Father.
I spent the first few chapters of the book trying to describe earlier parts of my life where, you know, spiritual things happened. But essentially, when I was really little, my mom taught me to pray, and she taught me that we would send blessings to people. And some of those were, you know, in the same house with you. Some were across town or in another state, and some were or had died already. And it didn't seem to matter. Everybody's alive wherever they are, and you send a blessing, which is kind of love. So even as a little child, I was praying for the souls in purgatory. Anybody that had died, that my prayers could still help. And I was very, very busy doing that as I would fall asleep. But you're probably asking more about when did this business of people show it up in your dreams?
Mm-hmm.
That was about 20 years ago. I'm now 63, so it was in my early 40s. I just went to sleep one night and was having one of my own dreams when it changed into something else.
Yeah, you didn't ask for this at all, did you?
Not specifically, no. I mean, I've been trying to put my life at the Lord's service the whole of my life, and I said, you know, do with me as you will. I'm ready for the adventure, and then one night the adventure took a big turn.
Did you ever ask yourself, Father, why me?
Well, a little, but that's not a very important question to me. I mean, you can also say, why not me?
Why not you? Sure. Absolutely.
That's really not a very important question to me. I just do what comes along.
The title of your book, Afterlife Interrupted. What is the interrupted portion of the book?
Well, you and your listeners are probably pretty familiar with the near-death experience, right?
Sure. Oh, yeah.
The whole idea of there being a continuum of things that appear to happen based on the evidence of people who've nearly died and had out-of-body experiences and so on, that several things happen in succession as a person is in the process of dying. But there's nothing to say that everything has to happen. It can be stopped. The people that I deal with, all of them died very suddenly, violently, and rupture. The idea of rupture was important to me in the experiences that I've heard. And they just don't want to participate in all of it, and they want it to stop. And so they just interrupt the process.
Do they know that they're dead when they come to you, whether it's in the dream state or otherwise?
Almost always, yeah. I think early on I might have had one or two that were kind of confused on that. But I think I'm sort of the discharge nurse at the end of a healthcare continuum.
Yeah.
The people that come to me have all been vetted. They're really ready to move along. And I started asking early on, how'd you find me? It's a little bit like your earlier question, why me? How did you find me? Well, I don't know. Somebody brought me here. I kept hearing that all the time. And it was clear that for whatever reason, I could help people along a continuum when they're just on the verge of being ready to cross.
You're a priest, so I probably know this answer, but are you a believer in the heaven and hell concept?
Well, I certainly believe in heaven, and I believe in some kind of hell. I'm not sure. I don't believe that God created a torture chamber. I believe whatever hell there is in the universe is of people's own making. Is it permanent? Well, I guess I don't know.
So but these 250 souls or entities that have come to you, where do they go afterwards? Do they go to this heavenly state? Do they go to hell? What happens to them?
Well, I wouldn't know unless I got the opportunity to talk to them a second time. And I never thought I was going to do that, George. I thought my job was finished when people had crossed. But then when it came time to write the book, the stories seemed so personal that I just had an ethical concern about whether it was fair to share them without asking. And a friend of mine said, well, geez, they talked to you once. Maybe they do it again. You know, my church, I try to be a good, you know, loyal church guy.
Sure.
And, where it's discouraged having this conversation with the dead, but I thought, oh, I think I have a really good reason. And so I did go back into prayer, protected prayer. We can talk a little bit about that.
Okay.
Into my protected prayer. And my friend Laura helped me. We just pretty much called a meeting with the 13 different people in the stories in the book and asked, would you mind if we use your story? And the surprising thing was we didn't just get a yes or no answer to a yes or no question. We got updates, which are delightful. And those go more to your question about where did they go. Well, they're in different places doing different things, but all of it's delightful. That's some of the favorite moments in my book are hearing what people are doing now that they're free of everything that burdened them earlier.
Now, of the 250 or so, Father, would you categorize them as all good people when they were alive, or were some of them, you know, murderers, robbers, and people like that?
Well, it's interesting because I believe everyone is well-made. I believe we're all inherently good, whether we're behaving well or not. I believe in the goodness of every human person.
Sure. I think we all start out good, at least.
Yeah, well, I'd push even further than that. I'd say we're still all fundamentally good. I'm trained in the theology of St. Thomas Aquinas, and he goes back to Aristotle, to the goodness of God, and that everything that came from the hand of God is good. Aquinas even teaches that Satan is still loved by God for two reasons. Can you think of what they might be?
Satan is loved by God for two reasons. Maybe one because he was an angel at one time.
Yeah, well, you're close. At least he's God's creature.
Okay.
And he's God's child.
Interesting.
Not just any kind of creature.
But see, I have I've got a difficult time, though, accepting people who have really hurt other people. I don't see the good in that. It's somewhere. I just can't find it.
Well, keep looking. That's what I would do.
I mean,
I get it.
I mean, Jeffrey Dahmer, for example, mass murderer. Where's the good there?
He's made in God's image. He's God's child. I haven't met him, but part of what I would like to do in my afterlife is I would like to be introduced to hard cases like that and say, is there anything I can do to help?
Well, they're probably all needing the help, but again, of the 250 that have come your way, might some of them have been those kinds of people when they were living?
I remember dealing with one guy that did murder a child, and everybody has a reason for what they do, even if it's ridiculous and stupid at the time. And I would only be dealing with such a person if they had done a major turning around, and this man had. Yeah, in answer to your question, yeah. But most of the time, I'm not dealing with... I've dealt with a whole lot more murder victims than I have murderers.
Now, in that particular case, with this entity, and I'll call it an entity...
Uh-huh. Person.
What happens to it? I mean, are you a believer in reincarnation? Does he come back as another human, or does he move on? What happens to him?
Well, I've not been trained... In my Catholic faith doesn't posit reincarnation. You know, it shows up a little bit in the Gospels where,
right.
John, you know, Jesus is John the Baptist back from the dead, something like that. But I respect people who believe in reincarnation, but there's nothing in my experiences that has led me to believe that that's what I need to shift my thinking toward. I think we all just keep going. We don't need to become another... we don't need to be incarnated again in order to keep having experiences that from which we can grow.
Are the dead, are they sad that they're gone from the human world?
Sometimes that's why they've been stuck at all. Sometimes
yeah.
They were just so enjoying the life that they had that it's hard for them to imagine going on without things the way they were. And so some of them get stuck. But then you're stuck for a certain amount of time, and you realize, okay, I've done this long enough. This is getting me nowhere. And then you begin to see an openness toward trying out something new.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with Father Nathan Castle. His website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. In his book, his story, Afterlife Interrupted, and we will be back in a moment. We'll take calls with him next hour on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Father Nathan Castle with us. Father, I remember my days in Catholic catechism classes. They kind of talked about heaven as a place like clouds with, you know, angels there with harps and things like that. And, of course, as I got older, I realized that's not the case at all. What does heaven look like anyway?
Well, I don't know. I can't give a guided tour. I don't know that I've...
You've not been there yet.
Well, I also believe that that God's in our midst, so I believe I've had tastes of it. But... What I've seen from the people that I've dealt with is the thing they report the most is a non-judgmental zone, that it's just so delightful to be in a place where nobody ever has a critical, unnecessary thought about anybody else.
When souls get stuck, what happens? What causes that?
Well, right. Remember that this little subset of people that I deal with died sudden violent deaths, which is an uncommon thing.
Right.
And I don't think that just because a person dies suddenly and violently that they get stuck. Sure, plenty of your listeners have lost someone to a sudden violent death, and I would not at all want them to think, oh, my God, they're on top of what we've already lost. We have to deal with stuck souls. Only a very few get stuck. But your question, sometimes it's anger at a person that killed them, or someone who behaved in a way that caused their death accidentally. Sometimes they're ashamed. Sometimes it's loss of reputation right at the end. Imagine, for example, living an upright life for 80 years and then doing something ridiculous at the end of it that ends your life. I dealt with one like that, Shelby. Sometimes people feel guilt, whether it's based in reality or not, that gets them stuck. There can be lots of different things. Sometimes people are already living a stuck lifestyle before they pass, and they kind of choose more of it. You must know at least one person like that.
Of course. What do you find as your mission doing this with them?
Well, whether I'm doing this or the more mundane work of a priest, I just want people to be happy. I believe that we were created to be happy. And to be happy, it's really necessary to be free, I think, at least free internally. And that's all I'm trying to do is help people be free. It has a kind of a counseling aspect to it.
Sure does, yeah.
A lot of times when people come for counsel, it's because they've tried everything and then nothing's working. And they can't imagine a way out of the problem that they're in. And a counselor can sometimes hear the same data and rearrange it in a different way and lead people to maybe a different conclusion or a different possibility. That's really what I'm doing.
Do they thank you when this is all wrapped up?
Oftentimes over their shoulder, because at the end of the process, they're being the train's pulling out of the station or something. They need to be on their way, and so sometimes it's kind of over their shoulder that happens frequently.
Of the 250, the number we've been using, do you reach all of them, or have some of them you've just not been able to help?
No, you know, because they've been vetted, they almost always are really ready to go. I think there was once, so when I let a little too much time go between when the dream occurred and when I got with a prayer partner to help that person. This isn't something that I do just on my own. There was one where I just don't think we reconnected, but the overwhelming majority, yes, they are ready to go. And when we get a chance to pray with them, they resolve whatever it was that their problem was, their stuckness.
Could you, Father, have been an exorcist if you wanted to?
I suppose. I mean, I don't know how those men get chosen. I haven't really dealt with the demonic all that much, just a little bit. But that could be part of my future. I don't know.
Interesting. Interesting.
Let me say a little bit about the way that we move into protected prayer. Because
I was just going to ask you about that, too. Go ahead.
Well, good, because it's I always tell people, I love human beings, and I believe that we're good, but I would encourage people not to hitchhike home. You know, there's plenty of people who are not good company just right now.
That's true. You're absolutely right.
And I believe the same is true of the spirit world, that stuff like Ouija boards or seances or whatever, where you want to talk to any spirit that's available, I just think it's analogous to picking up hitchhikers. Not every spirit out there is interested in your good. So when we do our protected prayer, I start with Michael the Archangel, with Mary, the Mother of Jesus. I have a whole list of saint and angel friends and people that I've known in this life that I know to be whole and wholesome people. Surround myself with and my partner with protection before we go into any of this work.
Are you protecting yourself in the partner, or are you protecting the spirit?
Myself and my partner. On the other realm, I know that they're taken care of. It's here that my partner and I, we need to be kept free from anything malevolent.
Have you ever been approached by the spirit that was out to deceive you and trick you for whatever reason?
Well, sure.
Really?
Well, I just believe that's the way that the spirit world works, that you're talking about tempters. You ever been tempted?
Of course.
You know, you're capable of doing that all by yourself, aren't you?
You are.
Tempt yourself with your next thought.
Of course. I'd like to blame that little voice in our head, right?
Yeah, that little voice, sometimes it can be your own psyche, but not necessarily. It could be a being that's trying to wheedle their way in there and get you to think about a course of action that is dark. Sure, I've been subject to that plenty.
We're with Father Nathan Castle, his book, Afterlife Interrupted. And by the way, Father, where can people get your book? I've got my signed copy from you. How about the other folks? Where can they pick it up?
It's on Amazon. And I got really good news today. The audio version just went live about 6 hours ago.
Oh, great. And our friend Jack Canfield from the Chicken Soup Books wrote a little blip for you on the back.
Yes, he did. I did a couple of seminars in Jack's home, and he and his team have been very good to me.
Excellent. Well, this is an amazing subject that we have dealt with a lot, and you're, you know, one of the first priests to come forward to talk about this. We used to have, as a guest, Art Bell did before he both passed on, Father Malachi Martin. I'm sure you've heard of him.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and he talked about things in the on the other side. What do you say to the human being, Father, the doubter, the skeptic, who doesn't believe in life after death?
Well, I would respect their opinion and thought. I'm not out to persuade people to be or think a way that they don't want to. I'm just testifying to what I've experienced and know to be true, but I do believe that we will all survive our deaths, and that those who don't believe that that's the case will simply awaken to it. A lot of the people that I've dealt with were not believers that they would survive their death, but here they are.
Take us through, if you can, a scenario where an individual dies in a tragic accident, car accident, fire, something, any one of them that you've looked at, then what happens?
Well, at some point, they show up in my dream, which is why I know about them at all. They give me something that looks like a little video. You know, most of our dreams are pictorial.
Right.
And I have some little bit of a plot line. So I'll see someone... May I give you an example from the book?
Sure. Oh, absolutely.
All right. I was in this particular one. I was in one of those cars from the late 70s, those huge, we used to call them land yachts, big, boxy, heavy, like, I don't know.
Chrome and steel and all that stuff.
Yeah, and I was driving one of those through the central business district of a small Georgia town. I knew that I was in Georgia. And I was behind the wheel, and I took a left turn onto a side street in this little business district. And the road turned into a staircase. And now I'm driving down a staircase. I get to the bottom. There's a river. The current turns the car to the left. I'm still behind the wheel trying to steer it while it sinks. And I wake up. Well, that turned out to be a man named Shelby. He had lived into his 80s. He had had a more than 50-year marriage. He had been had a great career as a lawyer. He got up every morning and in his retirement and dressed as the way we're going to work and sat at a cafe near the courthouse or whatnot with cronies. His daughter tried to get him to surrender the car keys because he was moving into dementia, but he wouldn't have it. And he proved her right by driving down a boat launch.
Ugh.
That's what the little ridges were that looked like a staircase.
Mm-hmm.
You ever driven on a boat? You know, when you back a trailer, there's those ridges that are in the cement that look like a staircase.
That's right.
That's what he did. He drove himself into a river, and he was just horrified because he was very fastidious in his appearance, and he ended up at the bottom of a river with his body covered in muck and silt, and he knew the people that had to cut him out of his clothes. He was horrified that the whole thing had happened, and he felt like he had died such an old fool. And after living an upright life for decades, that the story at his funeral would be, what an idiot.
It bothered him a lot.
It the idea of ruining his reputation at the end was what got him stuck. He wanted to crawl in a hole and die, but he was already dead.
So and in terms of Earth time, how soon do they come to you after they've died?
That's a really good question. Most of mine have been people who died during my lifetime. So I'm 63. They're not usually like yesterday or last week or something. They're usually a few years.
Okay.
There's some things in them like cell phones that can be a tip-off or 911, or sometimes there might be a reference to maybe 9/11, for example. There'll be some little markers where people will tell you, give you something, sort of the way a movie starts with music and fashions or automobiles or something that kind of situates you to a time. The dreams often have that in them.
When you wake up from these dreams, are you exhausted? Do you have energy? How do you feel?
No, I'm not exhausted. I keep a notebook on the nightstand because this happens about once a week. So I try to be ready for it. And I just come out of it. And oftentimes I'm coming to wakefulness before the dream is finished. Anyway, I'll write it down as quick as I can. I pray to the person and try to ask them to help me recall the detail before it slips away from me. But no, I'm not exhausted. Sometimes I'm exhausted after one of the sessions where we get with them in prayer and learn all the detail and help them cross over. Sometimes if the stories are really dark, sometimes when people have been, you know, like abductees.
Right.
Or I've dealt with some like cartel murders from Mexico or further south where the drug cartels do such horrible stuff. Sometimes I'll deal with one of those and then I'm kind of done. I'm looking for something lighter to do.
Have you ever had cases in dreams where you have to go to the police afterwards because the departed one has given you some information about their own death?
No, I haven't had that.
That hasn't happened yet. We've had psychics that have done that, and they're always the first suspects because they go to the police with information that only the police know. And, you know, they'll say things like the purse was hidden under her head. And you'd only know that if you were there, according to the police. And, you know, but once
it's funny the way this works. And I just don't believe that that's the work that God's given me to do. I kind of just stay at my task, which keeps me busy enough.
Do you help them in your dream state or
no, or
not? You're not in it after you converse with them.
No, I record the dream as they've told me that from their end, that my consciousness is something like a stream. We even use that language to call it a stream of consciousness that it's kind of green and glowing, and that they'll be led to it, and all they have to do is enter it. One guy named Hal, who's in the book, says they bring you to the bank, but you still have to launch the boat.
Good point. Do you, when you're in this kind of state, do you, gosh, it's so mind-boggling.
Do you mean during a dream or during the prayer?
During the dream. When you're in the dream state, I mean, are they telling you things in that dream state?
Yes.
Okay.
They're giving me details, like I just described Shelby in driving the car.
Right.
Sometimes they can be very brief. I remember one where it was no more than, it felt like about 5 seconds of watching two cars on a mountain road that couldn't see each other because of the mountain coming around a curve, banging into each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that was all it was. So there was, and then other times they're long and slow and very descriptive. It just depends on how a person tells a story.
Are you at the point in your career, your life with this father, that it doesn't bother you? I mean, is it something that you can accept and keep doing? Or...
Oh, yes, I have for 20 years. I just didn't write about it earlier. I've been a campus minister most of my career.
Okay.
I was at Arizona State for 12 years, and I was pastor at Stanford for 7. And I just felt like while I was doing that talking about this stuff too publicly would get in the way of a lot of the other work I was given to do.
And when you first started talking about this, how did people react?
Well, I chose people that I thought would be respectful of me.
Okay. Well, that's good.
You would, and then people had their own questions, and some are more curious than others. And so I tried not to belabor, you know, telling people stuff they didn't want to hear if they didn't want to hear it. But then others were interested in it, and then some became prayer partners to help me in the work of helping people cross.
Of this vast audience, Father, there are some who unfortunately will die tragically listening to this program right now.
Sure.
What advice do you give them that they can take with them on the other side if they will recollect this?
Forgive anybody who's hurt you.
Interesting.
Work on forgiving and don't give up. Keep at it. Forgiving from the heart and finishing the job, it might be your life's work, but it's worth doing.
Sounds like forgiveness is the most important aspect to all this.
Yeah, I think so. I think in terms of the blockage of spiritual energy and love, unforgiveness is, I think, the number one.
Father, stay with us. We're going to come back and take phone calls with you in our final hour. Father Nathan Castle with us. Again, his website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. The name of his book, Afterlife Interrupted.